for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The Trans-Pacific Partnership would link 12 countries and cover nearly 40% of the world economy. Yesterday, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe told a joint session of Congress the TPP would strengthen ties among allies facing a rising China. Opponents warn it benefits big corporations at the expense of American workers. Here to talk about details of the TPP, the debate over so-called fast-track authority, and growing opposition among Democrats, Laurie Wallach of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, Reed Wilson of The Washington Post, and John Murphy of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. But first, joining us from Washington, D.C., is Senator Ron Wyden, Democratic senator from Oregon. He sponsored a bill that would give President Obama trade promotion authority. Senator, what's in the bill, and why do you believe fast track is so important?
Diane, President Obama and I decided to seize the opportunity to produce the most progressive trade policy in history. And what it's all about is creating more good-paying jobs for middle-income workers, particularly in exports. By 2025, the number of middle-class households in the developing world is expected to nearly double, approaching more than a billion households. Those are people who are going to have spendable income. They are going to buy cars, they're going to buy food, they're going to buy bicycles, they're going to buy a lot of different products, and their companies are going to be purchasing airplanes and steel. I want to make sure that America gets those markets. In a lot of those countries that we're negotiating with, we have tariffs, double-digit tariffs, tariffs that go 30 to 40%. You relax them. I think we're going to see more middle-class jobs in America through exports.
All right. And this morning, E.J. Dionne has a column in the Washington Post. I'm going to quote you just two sentences. He says, what even the staunchest supporters of free trade cannot deny is that the promises of globalization ring very hollow in the parts of our nation that have been decimated by economic change. Our leaders keep pledging relief to individuals and communities left out of the bounty that trade and technology create. He's talking specifically about the widening gap in Baltimore. I wonder how you respond.
Well, I think EJ, as he does so often, makes an important point. Here's, for example, what I think we need to do to respond to those communities. I've written bipartisan tax reform legislation that takes the tax break for shipping jobs overseas. That has been a huge factor in hammering those hard-hit communities that EJ is talking about. Yes, globalization is real. Yes, technology is real. But there are a number of policies that come out of Washington, D.C., like rewarding companies for shipping jobs overseas that go right to the heart of the problem. Trade is an opportunity to get a lot of good-paying jobs, you know, back. I mean, when you look around the world, middle-class people want to buy the American brand. They want to buy the Oregon brand. They take great pride in it. We have the best workers. If we can do things like eliminate these tariff and non-tariff barriers the way the President and I want to do, I think there's a real path to respond to what EJ appropriately describes as real hurt in a lot of these communities.
I gather, Senator Wyden, that only five of the 29 chapters of the Trans-Pacific Trade Authority, only five have to do with actual trade issues. The other 24 chapters are about rewriting non-trade policy in favor of big corporations. And that's apparently why you have so many Democrats opposed. How do you respond?
Well, first of all, Diane, a majority of Democrats on the Senate Finance Committee voted for the Trade Promotion Act. There are two pieces to this puzzle, and it's hard to kind of sort them out. Right now, the Senate is working on the rules for a trade agreement. That's called Trade Promotion Authority. The actual agreement, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, has not been written yet. So I do want to make one point with respect to the TPP, because it relates to some changes that we've won as part of this effort that the President and I embarked on to make this the most progressive trade agreement ever. There's always been this concern about excessive secrecy in the debate about trade. I think that is a valid point. If you believe in trade as I do and you want more of it, you ought to get rid of all of this ridiculous secrecy that just makes people cynical. So for the first time, and this starts with the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, by law, that agreement must be public for 60 days before the president signs trade agreements and then sends them to the Congress. By the time the Congress votes on a deal, and this is important for listeners, in effect, listeners will be able to go to a congressperson's town hall meeting, and in effect have the agreement in their hands for something like 4 months before a vote is cast on the floor of the Senate and the House. And I think that's just an indication of why this approach is so much more progressive than anything that's come before.
But I gather if the president is given fast-track authority, the Congress will not have any right to change any part of that pact.
Well, let's talk about two aspects of this question. First, Tim Nesbitt, the former president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, said he didn't really quite understand all the fighting about fast track. He said that's the way labor negotiates their contracts. They go out and get a contract, and then it comes back to the membership for an up or down vote. So that's Tim Nesbitt, a former president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. But there's another major change, you know, here, and that is we have put in the Trade Promotion Act for the first time the ability of Congress to put the brakes on a bad deal. And for years, progressives said, oh my goodness, you know, you can fast track this. Why don't we have a chance to stop that? And we have, for the first time, set in place a process, again, that will start with the Trans-Pacific Partnership after it is actually written, where the Congress would have the ability to put the brakes on a bad agreement.
And how are they going to do that within the allotted time?
Well, what you do specifically is you say in the committees, the Finance Committee and the Ways and Means Committee, if anyone, and there are plenty of opponents of free trade on these committees, if they want to say, look, this trade agreement, like the TPP, an actual trade agreement, does not meet the negotiating objectives in the Trade Promotion Act, they can set in place a process to vote and put the brakes on it.
And how do you respond to the critics, Senator Wyden, who say that the TPP is just another NAFTA, a bad deal for the American economy, and a very bad deal for American workers?
I described why I think that middle-class, you know, workers, and particularly exports, are an ideal opportunity for our country at this time. Diane, you've talked about it on your show. One of the big economic challenges is getting wages up. Export jobs often pay better than do the non-trade jobs. They reflect a higher value-added component, often the fruits of American productivity. So I think this is part of the path to creating more high-skill, high-wage jobs. Our markets are generally open. what we face in a lot of these countries is very, very substantial tariffs. We face them in, with respect to manufacturing. We face them in, you know, in agriculture. And it seems to me that this agreement, and it has a whole host of progressive changes. For example, in the past, there's never been much of an effort to enforce the trade laws. This is dramatically different. It includes Sherrod Brown's provision for leveling the playing field. It includes our Enforce Act, which really grew out of what amounted to a sting operation.
All right.
We found companies doing merchandise laundering, and this gives us a chance to go after people who evade the duties.
One last question for you, sir, very briefly. Do you think that the TPP will or will not help the city of Baltimore?
I think that a trade agreement, by creating opportunities to create new jobs, and obviously Baltimore and hard-hit communities all over the country are putting a focus on creating, you know, new jobs, is an opportunity to at least deal with a part
all
of
right.
the challenge.
Short break. Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the financial services firm of Raymond James, for over 50 years offering wealth management, banking, and capital markets expertise with a focus on putting the client's financial well-being first. Learn more at raymondjames.com. From the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And from Heather Sturthaga and Paul G. Haga, supporting Salzburg Global Seminar, which works to challenge current and future leaders to solve issues of global concern. Learn more at salzburgglobal.org.
And welcome back. Joining us now is Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut. And Congressman DeLauro, you just heard Senator Wyden say his Trade Promotion Authority bill addresses many of the concerns that fellow Democrats have. Why are you going to vote against it?
Well, thank you very much, Diane. I'm delighted to be on the show this morning. And Ron Wyden is, Senator Wyden is a very, very good friend, served with him in the House. But we have really fundamental disagreements. First of all, none of the data that exists that come from, you don't even have to go all the way back to the NAFTA agreement. You can just go to the Korea Free Trade Agreement, and which we were then told that was going to create jobs, it was going to increase wages. In fact, what's happened with the Korea agreement is that it's increased our trade deficit, and the result has been a loss of about 70,000 jobs. That is the pattern. And you shouldn't take my word for this, but someone that you had on your show a couple of months ago, that's Robert Scott, who talked about, you know, unfair trade deals lower the wages of U.S. workers. The fact is that when we get a wage loss from increased deficits, and this is his comment, rather than reducing our too high trade deficit, past trade agreements have actually been followed by larger U.S. trade deficits. So that, and the senator speaks about exports, and none of those who are supportive of this effort ever talk about the imports that come in great numbers, which creates an unbelievable imbalance. I'd also like to, and I want to get back to the economic arguments, but the senator said something that really is not accurate. The agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, is nearly finished. This is, I believe what he said wasn't written yet. They've been at this for 6 years. And the bulk of the input has come from special interests, from corporations. The people who have been left out of the equation are the American public, because there's been no public scrutiny of this effort. The members of Congress have been left out. So we're looking at special interest corporations who have had access to the document, as has the various countries involved, Vietnam, and the Malaysia, the other countries who are involved in this effort. But I think what you did was hit the nail on the head with regard to how does this result in jobs and increased wages. It does not.
Let me ask you about something else. He said that making his bill, putting it on fast track, makes it more transparent by allowing members of Congress access to trade deals in draft form.
This is a hoax. It really is a hoax. You know, there is nothing. We could have this document today and be able to look at it, which is, this is unprecedented, the secrecy involved in this agreement. NAFTA was made public. Put it on a website. Let us see it. Why is there all this secrecy about it? And the senator talked about this is, he talked about 60 days after. If you provide this trade promotion authority, fast track authority to the president, then the treaty is completed. It is done and finished. We may be able to look at it, Diane, but there isn't anything that we can do about it.
But
we're
now,
stuck with it.
Let me ask you, those proponents of TPP say that this would promote the U.S. economy and in the long run help to grow the economy, and in the process, create more jobs. What do you say?
That's the fallacy. That really is. And it really is. You can say something, and you can keep repeating it, but the facts and the empirical data over the years just belies all of that.
Why? How so?
Well, because, in fact, we have seen trade deficits increase after the free trade agreements. Increase a deficit then creates a loss of jobs. We have it is the deficit is a drag on our gross domestic product, and that does not encourage growth. Loss of jobs has been the byword. I just mentioned to you the Korea agreement. There was a lot of fanfare about Korea, that it was going to create jobs. The same language that the senator has used. That was the language that was used for NAFTA, and I was a member of the Congress during the NAFTA debate. All the increase in jobs. We lost about 800,000 jobs at that time. Again, Korea, about 70,000 jobs. Many of the jobs are in the manufacturing sector. What happens if people go to get rehired, Diane, is that they are rehired in a job that pays them two-thirds of what they were making before. This is overall loss of jobs and a depression of wages. That has been the spiral of our free trade agreement.
But
and let me, there's one last piece. The administration will tell us that the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is based on the Korea Agreement, that it is the same template which has created a loss of jobs and not a growth in our economy by increasing our trade deficit. Our trade deficit has gone up.
All right, but on the other hand, can't the loss of jobs also be attributed to the fact that we've got a huge technological change going on in this country that may in and of itself have been taking away some of those jobs in the steel industry, in the automobile industry, other industries that were at one time absolutely predominant in cities like Baltimore?
Well, let me just say this. Look, one cannot have their head in the sand and not deny globalization and technology. But what the agreements do ultimately is bad public policy, which only adds fuel to the fire. Because there are technological changes that have been made. There is globalization, but when we have a trade policy that puts American workers at a disadvantage for whatever reasons, that is not a good direction for us to go in. Let me mention one other area, they will not discuss. The administration not only will not discuss this, if this were an agreement that was looking at how we look at creating jobs, there would be a chapter on currency. Currency manipulation practiced by Japan and one or two of the other countries involved in this agreement has been one of the prime reasons for loss of jobs. Don't take my word for it. Go to a Fred Bergston who headed up the Peterson Institute, where he says that trade deficits due to currency manipulation are spread around the world. However, the largest share of the loss of jobs has been in the United States, and the U.S. has lost between 1 million and 5 million jobs due to foreign currency manipulation.
Right.
This administration says no on currency manipulation.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe addressed a joint session of Congress yesterday. Did anything he had to say sway you, and is there any trade promotion authority bill you would vote for?
Well, let me just say that's two questions. With what the Prime Minister, and look, the United States and Japan have been staunch allies. Witness that we signed a new defense agreement within the last couple of days. But what we didn't hear the Prime Minister talk about his own history of anti-free trade policies. They talk about their sacred goods. He's talked about rice, wheat, meat, dairy, sugar. And he said that they need to be protected in sanctuaries. He did not address the issue of currency manipulation, which I just made reference to. Currency manipulation is at odds with any concept of free trade. He doesn't mention that at all. He said some things about good relationships and the Second World War and so forth, but as it has to do with a trade promotion authority, he said nothing. To get to your second question, which I'm really am pleased that you asked, with regard to fast track, and you should understand, the listeners should understand that members of Congress, probably for over the last several years, and particularly in the last couple of years, we have written over and over and over again to the administration talking about ways in which we could increase congressional input. And it has been for several years. But over the last 2 years, we've talked about a congressional role in selecting appropriate trade partners. We're going to trade with the likes of Brunei and Malaysia, who Brunei practices Sharia law and flogs gays and stones women. We are involved with Malaysia and Vietnam all on human rights issues, Mexico on human rights issues. We have a toxic food coming in from both Malaysia and from Vietnam. And so we've asked, let's have a role in selecting a partners. Let's have Congress certify that the objectives, the mandatory objectives, have been met.
All right.
That is not happening here before the treaty is concluded. And let us have the opportunity to authorize the executive branch to sign the agreement.
All right.
We've heard nothing back from the administration. They have just dismissed us on these issues.
Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, thank you so much for
joining us.
Good to have both points of view. And I am now going to turn to our guests here in the studio, Reed Wilson, from what you've heard from both Senator Wyden and Congresswoman DeLauro. What do you make of whether fast-track authority is going to go through?
Well, the debate, the fast-track authority is likely to pass the U.S. Senate. There are enough votes. Senator Wyden mentioned the number of votes in the Senate Finance Committee to pass it. It's likely to pass on the floor once a number of other measures are dispensed with, including things like the budget and a bill on the negotiations with Iran. The question is really whether or not it has the votes in the House of Representatives. 22 years ago, when NAFTA passed, 102 Democrats voted in favor of NAFTA, about 135 voted against it. This time, there won't be anywhere near 100 Democrats voting in favor of either trade promotion authority or the eventual
trans-Pacific. So what happens if they don't?
Well, this is the thing. The Republicans have enough votes, enough members to pass it simply on their own. However, there are a lot of Republican members who are skeptical about giving President Obama more authority. The trade promotion authority gives some new authority to the administration. That's not something that a lot of Tea Party Republicans want to do when they've got to run in primaries next year.
And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. John Murphy, what did you make of Congresswoman DeLauro's arguments against not only Fast Track, but the TPP itself?
I think she makes a fair point that today we're in a world where trade is a reality. And for the United States, international trade has played a very important role in our economy, provided about a third of our economic growth just in the past 5 years. And about 40 million jobs today depend on trade. But looking ahead, there's more than a glimmer of truth in the notion that the playing field isn't level. Too often, when American exporters are trying to sell their goods abroad, they face tariffs and other barriers that are very high. They soar into the double digits, as Senator Wyden points out. By contrast, I think we all recognize that the U.S. market is pretty much wide open. The average tariff on goods coming in is just 1.5%. That's why these trade agreements do such a good job creating a level playing field for American exporters, for the workers they employ, and for farmers. And that's why today, if you look at the 20 countries where we have trade agreements in place, they represent just 6% of the world's population, but they're buying nearly half of our exports.
And to you, Laurie Wallach, what do you make of E.J. Dionne's connections between the TPP and what has happened in Baltimore?
The question with trade agreements is, under what rules do we trade? And the problem is the model of trade agreements we've been using since NAFTA, on which the TPP is based, it's a straight line from NAFTA to the Korea Agreement to TPP, literally make it easier to offshore American jobs. There's all of them have an investment chapter that gives special safeguards and privileges if you relocate. So what the connection is we, as Congresswoman DeLauro said, have made some bad public policy about how we trade. in setting up rules that actually have benefited the 500 special interests, their corporate trade advisors, who've helped set these rules. But as a result, not just in Baltimore, but actually coast to coast, north to south, since NAFTA, we have lost more than 5 million American manufacturing jobs. And we have seen, there's unanimity across the studies, downward pressure on wages, trade, this current model being one of the main contributors to growing income inequality. And the problem is, the good news, I guess, is it's a choice. So with the TPP, the question is, we've got an agreement that's almost done. It replicates the old model. It's not the most progressive trade agreement. It literally replicates the labor and environmental rules that were in Bush's last four trade agreements. And are we going to do that, or are we going to do something that doesn't make it easier to offshore our jobs?
Laurie Wallach, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, Reed Wilson of The Washington Post, John Murphy of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Your calls, your comments when we come back. Stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees to choose from, offered 100% online, with 6 start dates a year. Learn more at online.asu.edu. From Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And from the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR be the model for high-quality journalism in the 21st century.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, waste to energy incinerators burn garbage to generate electricity. Communities often oppose them because of pollution concerns, but some cities and counties are reconsidering them as a greener alternative to landfills. The pros and cons of garbage incinerators, the Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And welcome back. Our first email from David in Virginia. Please note that Senator Wyden did not answer Diane's question about how the majority of the TPP sections have nothing to do with trade policy. Reed Wilson.
This is one of the chief complaints that Democrats have, Democratic opponents of TPA and TPP have. We heard it from Congresswoman DeLauro that the treaty is still classified, that it is not available to the public. Of course, Senator Wyden said it would be available for 60 days once something is done. And by the way, we're running up against a pretty tight deadline here in terms of when they can actually finish it. The foreign ministers from the 12 countries involved need to have one more meeting to dot the I's and cross the T's. And when after they do, that has to happen by about June or July, practically speaking, for some kind of legislation to hit the floor in Congress by the end of the year.
But if 25 sections of the TPP are not devoted to trade policy and only 5 are, What are the other 25 all about?
Well, I don't have that classification. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say I haven't read the treaty.
So. Laurie?
It's actually the chapter heads are listed on the trade representative's website. Plus, thank God, some of them have leaked. So the other chapters include, for instance, a requirement to import food that doesn't meet our safety standards, rollbacks of financial regulations, and limits on internet freedom. There's even a chapter that limits Buy American, Buy Local procurement. And there are two chapters that could raise medicine prices. One expands the monopoly patents for the big pharmaceutical companies. The other one, which has gotten AARP for the first time involved in a trade debate, would allow the pharmaceutical companies to challenge the pricing decisions of Medicare and Medicaid.
John Murphy, an email from Helen in North Carolina says the TPP is not just about jobs. Please discuss what it will do to our environmental regulations.
Well, I'd like to respond to the notion that much of the agreement doesn't have to do with trade. In fact, it has strong rules that help American companies and the workers they employ in a lot of ways. For instance, on intellectual property, piracy and counterfeiting around the world is a huge problem for the 50 million American jobs that depend on seeing their intellectual property protected. That's one chapter in the TPP. There are rules about competing with state-owned enterprises from other countries, which sometimes they have government favoritism that will help them to outcompete U.S. companies. So in a changing world economy, we need rules like that that are going to ensure a fair play.
What about the environmental concerns?
On the environment, the Obama administration has been working hard to see multilateral agreements on environmental protection included in the TPP. This chapter did leak. And what you saw in the leak was that the Obama administration was working very hard to achieve these goals. And I think that's why you saw a number of environmental groups such as Oceana come out recently supporting what the administration is trying to do there. If the TPP were to be defeated, none of those goals would be accomplished.
Larry Wallach.
Well, the Sierra Club, Greenpeace, NRDC, which even supported NAFTA, have all come out strongly against the TPP based on looking at that darn text, which basically repeats the same environmental standards that were in President Bush's last trade agreements, which the Government Accountability Office said had flopped. But worse, Diane, they've been in agreements and countries just roll back their environmental laws. Laws get attacked. And that's allowed under the agreements. In fact, the agreements have that mechanism with the corporate tribunals, the investor state system. That's another of the chapters that have nothing to do with trade, where foreign corporations can go around our courts and our laws and attack the U.S. government for and demand compensation from its taxpayers before a tribunal of three corporate attorneys for having to meet our domestic laws that they think undermine their new investor privileges.
It's interesting that E.J. Dionne writes that Baltimore and its inner suburbs were once home to the vast manufacturing facilities operated by Bethlehem Steel, General Motors, and Martin Marietta. Are any of those jobs coming back, Reed?
It's very hard to see how they would. You made the point earlier that the economy has fundamentally changed over the last several years. I did a little look at some census numbers the other day. The average congressional district of all the jobs that are available, just 10.6% are in the manufacturing sector. That's obviously far below what existed just a few decades ago. You know, whether that's NAFTA, whether that's the changing and evolving economy. I think my friends here will have their own opinions on that. But it's hard to see how those jobs come back with the trade agreement, without a trade agreement.
All right, let's open the phones. First, we'll go to Laura in Bartlett, New Hampshire. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks, Diane, for being one of the last hopeful bastions in true environmental and investigative journalism. I have 1,000 activists on my Facebook page. It's Laura Aaron, if anybody cares to look. And everybody is absolutely concern deeply that if this passes, it will in fact undermine and negate individual states' rights to protect food safety, the environmental regulations, and other kinds of things that are critical to a healthy, safe environment. And lastly, we already have horrific environmental catastrophes looming with greenhouse gas emissions, with the fossil fuels that are going to be required. This is a finite planet. It's 70% water and 30% land, and we just look at it like it's an onion, and we can just keep taking and taking and taking from it.
Okay, Reed Wilson's states' rights.
This is such an interesting case of strange bedfellows here, of the two wings of both the Republican and the Democratic Party, I won't say extreme wings, but the conservative Republicans and the liberal Democrats who oppose this thing are finding common cause because of this marriage of things like states' rights and the environment. The conservatives care very much about states' rights, about protecting a state's ability and by the way, the United States' ability to be independent of international law or international government. On the other hand, it is the environmental laws that are being attacked that is something that liberals care about a significant amount. So you've got some very interesting people who are getting together to oppose this thing.
John Murphy.
Well, I think the bigger story when it comes to strange bedfellows is the degree to which you have President Obama, who recently pointed out that he didn't exactly get elected by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, working very hard to see this trade agenda move forward and collaborating with Leader McConnell and Speaker Boehner and leaders in Congress. And in fact, what you see is on the right, you have folks such as Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, who's come out strongly and has accurately described trade promotion authority as not a handout or a power grab by the president, but rather an opportunity for Congress, as Senator Wyden said, to set its priorities for trade negotiations and to set parameters for holding the administration accountable on how those negotiations will go forward.
Lori Wallach, I'm really interested in the fact that we've got a 2016 election coming up. Considering exactly what John Murphy has just said, how do you think this whole trade deal negotiation, if you will, fits into President Obama's outlook for the presidential election?
Whew. That's a dicey question, because basically the scenario that we now have is almost every congressional Democrat in the House of Representatives is against fast track, even though it's their own president, because the TPP is almost done. They can see the text. They're forbidden from talking about what they see under the secrecy rules, but they've seen what it is. They don't want to be responsible for fast-tracking that into place. So they're all against more of the same job-killing trade agreements. You've got the entire Democratic base, thousands of organizations that do the election work for this and every campaign, all the unions unified, every single one, the environmental groups, the family farm groups, the faith groups, the consumer groups, the internet freedom groups, the LGBT groups, the human rights groups are all united and have as a priority stopping fast track for the TPP. And so then you have Hillary Clinton, who wants to get the support from all of those groups and wants to be in agreement with where the party is going. And she's basically between a rock and a sharp place because Obama's over there with the Chamber of Commerce.
And hadn't she originally been in favor of this agreement?
Well, Hillary Clinton's State Department was involved in the negotiations, and this is something. I mean, obviously, Bill Clinton backed NAFTA, and the Clintons have not exactly been the most anti-trade Democrats in the entire party. So this is a question that she's going to have to answer. She hasn't offered a real answer. She sort of hedged her. You know, she's waiting to see what the final language is going to be. But this is going to be something that is going to put her at odds, probably put her at odds with a part of the Democratic base, whichever way she goes. And it is likely to put her at odds just based on her past history in the State Department, put her at odds with the larger part of the Democratic base.
All right. To John in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're on the air.
Yes. Thank you very much, Diane, for taking my call. I wonder in the TPP, even Obama said not too long ago, just one moment, please, there's a drill going, just one moment. Just 1 minute. It's Obama said just a couple of months ago that it's silly to reward companies offshoring jobs with subsidies. I wonder in the TPP if there's rules against that.
Go ahead.
Well, I was shaking my head because of, speaking of strange bedfellows, the Cato Institute, the libertarian organization, points out that TPP includes the rules for investors that subsidize offshoring. They actually promote offshoring. They call it basically a subsidy against the risk of offshoring by providing companies that leave special protections. You know, I was thinking back in Baltimore, if folks want to see the list of just the jobs even the government has certified as trade casualties in their area, you can go to our website, which is tradewatch.org, and go to our trade data center, and we have the trade adjustment assistance list set up so you can put your zip code in, and it will pick up all the certified jobs. There are almost 3 million since NAFTA that the government, under one narrow program, has said are casualties of trade agreements. And you can get the list. Look at Baltimore, but look to your own town, because that is what you get when you have trade agreements like TPP that make it easier to offshore. And, you know, also, frankly, put American workers' wages at risk by pitting us against workers in Vietnam who make less than 60 cents an hour.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And let's go now to Enuncio in Miami Beach, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Diane.
Sure.
I came in on the discussion when I believe it's the guy from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce got all excited and enthusiastic saying,
let's just, well, he's gone. I don't know where he is.
I am excited and enthusiastic.
Yes, I understand that. Let's go to Ryan in Houston, Texas. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to hear the panelists comment on the allegations that the report is going to have things like internet censorship and highly aggressive copyright protections that are going to allow companies like the RIAA and the MPAA to sue the government or consumers very heavily for supposed copyright infringement. And then also, lastly, supposed clauses that are going to allow companies to sue the government over the loss of quote-unquote future profits.
So Senator Wyden has been a real champion of internet freedom, and he was a strong opponent of SOPA and PIPA, which involve these issues. And he has made it a top priority to ensure that this bill does not go in that direction. And in fact, what you see when you look at the bill is that it insists on the trade agreement conforming to U.S. law and how the United States is going to go through with that. There's also, you hear a lot of charges in this trade debate that come up from time to time. I remember a past one where there was an accusation that the trade agreement would be bad for dentists in North Carolina. And so we actually had to explain to people how the trade agreement wasn't anti-dentite. We hear this particularly with the investment provisions and investor-state dispute settlement. In fact, these provisions have been around for more than 30 years. They're based on simple arbitration where the governments get to choose two of the arbiters and the arbiters choose the third. And at the end of the day, in the past, the United States has never lost one case. So it's a tempest in a teacup, but it also provides a valuable protection for U.S. companies when they invest abroad. For instance, in Venezuela, where tens of billions of dollars of investments have been expropriated, this allowed companies to seek some redress.
John Murphy, how do you see this playing out? Will the president get trade promotion authority, and when? Very briefly.
I think in the next few weeks, we'll see a major push. The president and his administration are working it very hard. And I think we're going to see more Democrats coming out in support. And we're also seeing very strong support among Republicans. So I think the trend is in a good direction for
approval.
Tell
me quickly why President Obama is pushing this so hard.
Well, I think this is a part of his legacy. He sees this as something that he can leave after he leaves office that will do something good for the U.S. economy. President Obama has not always conformed to sort of stereotypical liberalism, and I think this is one way in which he sort of divides from that.
Lori Wallach, will he get trade authority and fast track?
I don't think so. And in fact, Congress has refused to allow this authority to go into effect, but for five of the last 21 years. Since 88, the only presidents who get it were Reagan and Bush, because it lets a president have so much control over Congress's constitutional authorities, over law writing, and over trade.
Lori Wallach, Public Citizens, Global Trade Watch, Reed Wilson of The Washington Post, John Murphy of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We shall wait and watch. Thank you all so much.
Thanks a lot, Diane.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Susan Casey, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Danielle Knight, Allison Brody, and Alexandra Boti. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Natalie Yurev-Lifker answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.